Continuing with Canto 10, Chapter 11, starting with Text 57. And what just happened is, this is Krishna's childhood pastimes. So, everybody shifted from Gokul to Vrindavan. Krishna loved Vrindavan. Govardhan Hill, the river Jamuna, and the forest of Vrindavan. He's between 3 and 4 years old now. He's herding calves, and he's playing with the cowherd boys all day long, and calves are following. And Vatsasura comes, sent by Kamsa. We read a really nice section of Gopal Champu of Kamsa's conniving and making his plans. Vatsasura was discerned, or Krishna understood it wasn't a calf, it was a demon. He killed the demon, threw him in a kapita tree. And then later, all the way from the forest of Vrindavan to Nandishwara, they saw by the side of a lake a giant, looked like a mountain top. And it wasn't a mountain top. As they got closer, it was an animal. They got closer, it was a crane. They got closer and the crane tried to swallow Krishna. But he couldn't. He got him in his beak, and the cowherd boys and Balaram fainted. And Krishna made his body hot like fire. And the Baka demon spit him out and tried with his beak to bite him. Krishna bifurcated his beak. The boys were really happy. They gathered the calves and went back to Vrindavan and informed everybody, guess what? Krishna did it again. And they were now evaluating what has happened. The last text, 56, Vishwanath. Formerly killed all these demons, and therefore this verse answers the question, if that were true, then they would have been able to destroy Krishna, but when they tried to kill Krishna, they got killed by Krishna. So now we're on the next verse. This is Nanda considering. The words of persons in full knowledge of Brahman never become untrue. It is very wonderful that whatever Gargamuni predicted, we are now actually experiencing in all detail. So the name-giving ceremony was done by Gargamuni, and he spoke some verses in chapter 8, which we're going to hear a little bit about later on. Those were repeated again in chapter 26. Chapter 26 is chapter 26. What is the context of that being spoken again? Chapter 26.
Like when Nanda Maharaj was saved from the Varuna,
Not sure that's right. Let me look. That's after the Govardhan Leela. It's after the Govardhan Leela. 26 is after the Govardhan Leela. So now back to, so that is repeated again in chapter 26. They're speculating, who is this boy? And Nanda Maharaj concludes, well, here's what Garga Muni said this boy is, and he recalled what happened here. Okay. Something's wrong. Oh no. Okay. Now it's happening again. Chapter 35. Here's the BBT purport. No, this is Prabhupada. Canto 10, chapter 11, text 57. The purpose of human life is indicated in Brahma Sutra, Atatha Brahma Jigyasa. To make one's life perfect, in the past, present, and future, one must learn about Brahman. Because of intense affection, Nanda Maharaj could not understand Krishna as he is. Garga Muni was able to know everything, past, present, and future, by studying the Vedas. But Nanda Maharaj could not understand Krishna directly. Because of his intense love for Krishna, he forgot who Krishna was, and could not understand Krishna's potency. Although Krishna is Narayana himself, Garga Muni did not disclose this. Thus, Nanda Maharaj appreciated the words of Garga Muni, but because of his deep affection, he could not understand who Krishna was. Although Garga Muni had said that Krishna's qualities would be exactly like those of Narayana. And here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. The reason for the condition mentioned above is now given. Garga said that he had qualities like Narayana. Seated in the meeting room, they discussed again and again about the naughtiness of the boy and his killing of Vatsasura and Bakasura. And they composed songs, which they sang again and again. Katam Kurvantaha. They did not know the pain of material existence or pay attention to knowledge of material existence. Bhavasya Vedanam. We'll hear some more about that. They didn't know the pain of material existence. Other elderly cowherd men coming from other places informed Nanda Maharaj about liberation from the material world. Quote, half your life is gone. Why do you remain immersed in discussing about child, family, and wife? Why don't you concentrate on knowledge, vairagya, austerity, and remembrance of Narayana to get deliverance from the material world? Although they requested in this way, Nanda and other cowherd men did not pay any attention to that. Vavasya Vedanam Na Avidan. To interpret the meaning to be, they did not enjoy the pains of material life, is not acceptable. Paragraph. Bhagavatam states the exalted nature of the cowherd men and women. Namely, these cowherd men and women are not touched by the material world born of ignorance. Bhagavatam 10:6:40. Here's the BBT translation. Having to do with the affection. Chapter 6 of Canto 10 is still in Vatsalya, so it's the parental affection and dealings with Krishna. Because of their relationship as mother and son, although the gopis were engaged in various family activities, one should never think that they return to this material world after leaving their bodies. So the commentary goes on. As stated before, there is no question that they could be affected by the pains of the material world. In this way, whatever appears as material pains is only nourishing to the pastimes, and therefore called Lila Maya. We're going to hear some more about Lila Maya tomorrow morning. Not only did they speak about Krishna and his past and future pastimes, but they also played with Krishna, Ramanaha. Thus, they did not know the sufferings of materialistic persons, bhava, vedanam, though they were living in the material world. When they say, I am suffering from hunger, that hunger is not related to the material world. Jiva Goswami writes, though they showed the facts out of great affection as parents, they speak with wonder. The words of the devotee or persons who know the conclusion of the Vedas cannot be untrue. Garga. What Garga said is now experienced. Though Garga's words were secret, Nanda revealed Krishna's glory somewhat to the cowherds, since he was honest in nature and had affection for them as friends. Sanatana Goswami writes, though they knew the greatness of Krishna, they did not recognize him as the Lord out of great affection. He is some great person. They confirmed their thoughts with Garga's words. Oho! Indicates astonishment. We'll hear some more about astonishment too shortly. The words of the devotees who know the meaning of the Vedas are never untrue. That's Garga again. What he said has been experienced. Ava-bhavi. Because Nanda was a great devotee and had great affection for his friends, he revealed to the cowherds a little of Garga's words glorifying Krishna, though they were secret words. This increased their affection for Krishna since they had natural affection for him. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, the reason for the condition mentioned above is now given. Nanda continued, Garga Muni said Krishna's qualities would be exactly like those of Narayana. So we're going to go on to the next verse, but before I do that, a question came up yesterday. Our hostess, right? She wanted to know what are the 7 secondary rasas. So I sent you the link, or the Chaitanya Charitamrita reference. So I'm going to read about secondary rasas. And one of them is astonishment in this instance in relation to what's going on after Krishna comes back after killing Bakasura. They're astonished. So it's a little detailed. The list that's found in Nectar Devotion is slightly different than the list that's found in Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is exactly the same list that's found in Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu. But the number is still 7. Here's the 7 listed in Nectar Devotion, which is a summary study of Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu. Laughter, compassion, anger, chivalry, dread, astonishment, and ghastliness. There's some advice that Garga Muni gave to Nanda Maharaj about Krishna. Don't be astonished by his activities because he has powers like Narayan. Meaning, don't fail to protect him. Make sure that you hold intact your parental affection. Do not think that he's Narayan. You'll see. So in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's two verses. This is talks with Rupa Goswami, chapter 19 of Madhya Lila, where Lord Chaitanya is listing, Prabhupada doesn't call them secondary rasas, he calls them indirect mellows. Instead of using the word astonishment, he translates it in Chaitanya Charitamrita as wonder. You'll hear the Sanskrit in just a moment. Laughter, wonder, or astonishment. Chivalry, compassion, anger. Disaster is in Nectar Devotion is ghastliness, and fear, or in Nectar Devotion is dread. So just slightly different words, same Sanskrit. So here's the Sanskrit words and the English meaning. Hasya means laughter. Adbhuta, wonder, astonishment. Viraha, chivalry. Karuna, compassion. And compassion is the same in Chaitanya Charitamrita, but in the next text it's going to be slightly different. Karuna. Raudra is anger. Bayanakaha, fear. And Bibatsaha, disaster. Or ghastliness. Here's the terms from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Now there, the term that's used is Gona Rasa. If you recall, maybe from Bhakti, Sri Brahma Samhita speaks of Gona Bhakti. Gona Bhakti. Don't remember. Gona Bhakti, secondary Bhakti. There's a misprint in the BBT publication that it corrected it. It was Guna Bhakti, but it's Gona Bhakti, secondary. Hasya, humor. So instead of laughter, it's humor. Adbhuta, astonishment. Vira, vira up here is chivalry. And in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is translated as enthusiasm. Karuna, its common translation is compassion, but it's also lamentation or sorrow. And we discussed this at length in Ramayana when we visited Ayodhya. This sorrow, sorrow, sorrow. It's a secondary rasa. Lamentation. Sorrow. And we'll hear something further about it shortly. But remember this karuna topic. Rodra, anger. Bayanaka, fear. And bibhatsa. This is disgust. The way that it's translated here. Disgust, disaster, ghastliness. So similar terminology. Next is, these two verses. Madhya Lila, chapter 19, text 187. In addition to the five direct mellows, there are seven indirect mellows known as, and here they are again, the seven. Laughter, wonder, chivalry, compassion, anger, disaster, fear. And Srila Prabhupada's purport. These seven indirect mellows are explained in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 4.1.6. Then he explains each one, gives examples. Hasya Bhakti, laughing devotion is explained as follows. Rupa Goswami says, when through devotional service a laughing attachment to Krishna is developed, it is called Hasya Bhakti Rasa by learned scholars. And Adbhuta Rasa is described when one's general attachment is fixed in wonder, it is called Adbhuta Bhakti Rasa. When Vira Bhakti Rasa is described, when attachment to Krishna mixes with bellicose tendency. Bellicose means talking too much. The charitable tendency or the merciful tendency of the heart of the devotee, such attachment is called virabhakti. Here the translation bellicose is having or showing a ready disposition to fight. So bellicose is not just verbal, it's other than beyond verbal. Chivalry. Bellicose tendency. So read it again. When attachment to Krishna mixes with bellicose tendency, the charitable tendency or the merciful tendency in the heart of the devotee, such devotion is called Vira Bhakti Rasa. Karuna Bhakti is described. When one's devotional attitude and attachment for Krishna is mixed with lamentation, it is called Karuna Bhakti Rasa. So Karuna, the general meaning, is taken as compassion. But here it's devotional mixed with lamentation. I'm going to read directly taken from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And the title is Karuna Bhakti Rasa, where Shoka Rati, Shoka means Harsha Shoka. Shoka means sadness. When Shoka Rati is nourished in the heart of the devotee by suitable vibhavas and other elements, it is called Karuna Bhakti Rasa. Though, this is the next verse. This is the beginning of a chapter, the whole section on Karuna Rasa. Though imperishably blissful Krishna can never fall into misery, Shoka, from his Sarupa bliss, because of particular varieties of prema, Krishna and his dear ones take on the appearance of falling into misfortune, like as being in the beak of Baka. And what the cowherd boys and Balaram felt when they saw that. And become the Vishaya of Karuna Rasa. That's a whole science. So Shoka causes a lack of awareness of Krishna's powers. So when we heard Balaram, and Balaram is powerful, he's as powerful as Krishna, but his affection for Krishna, the primary rasa, the primary bhava, stai bhava, is so strong. When he saw, he forgot Krishna's power, and he was in this position of shock. They fainted. It's pretty intense. This great, great, great distress. Not for themselves, out of compassion for Krishna's well-being, because that's their life and soul. That was the point that we read about, and here this is just taking it further. And then the final conclusion of the whole section, Rupa Goswami says, this produces happiness. Like we discussed in Ramayana, the sorrow and sorrow and sorrow is a secondary rasa that enhances the primary rasa and is actually an ecstasy. It's a part of the mystery of Krishna bhakti. So back to this list. Bhayanaka bhakti rasa. When devotion is mixed with fear, it is called bhayanaka bhakti rasa. When one's attachment for Krishna develops in an abominable way, and the devotee enjoys it, it is called bhivatsa bhakti rasa. So here's the conclusion. And it was, all of this is just because it's about where, what we're about to read. Garga's words about Krishna. Who is he? In conclusion, when a pure devotee is situated in any one of the five principal mellows, list them, and that mellow is mixed with one or more of the seven indirect bhakti rasas, list them, the indirect mellow becomes prominent. It rises and then it falls and subsides. The primary rasa is there all the while. It's just enhancing the experience of happiness. So here's commentary on this verse 57 that's discussed by Jiva Goswami way back in chapter 26. This is wonderful Krishna. This is after the Govardhan Leela. And Jiva Goswami is quoting the Sanskrit first for Garga's message to Nanda. And I could read the Sanskrit. Well, Narayana Samo Gunai, that is, he has qualities as good as Narayana, the same as, equal to, qualities as Narayana. Shriya, his opulence. Kirtya, his name and fame. And Anubhavena, and his influence, just like Narayana. And so, tat karmasu na vismayaha. Don't be astonished by his activities. So this is the translation. Jiva Goswami's rendering of that verse from chapter 26. Therefore, Ananda Maharaj, this child of yours is as good as Narayana. In his transcendental qualities, opulence, name, fame, and influence, he is exactly like Narayana, Samaha. Thus, you should not be astonished by his activities. And then, Jiva Goswami comments, this statement from chapter 26 differs from the statement Garga made in chapter 8. And the statement that Garga made in chapter 8 is Tasman Nandamajo Yam, that is, your child is equal to Narayana. And then he says, Gopayasva Samahitaha. You should protect this child very carefully. And I'll explain. I'll summarize this after reading all this. Out of humility, Garga hints that everyone should protect the child. Gopayasva samahita. Protect the child very carefully with possessiveness. That's a word that our acharyas use regularly to indicate the intensity of affection. And for parents, in transcendental sweetness of their love for Krishna, It's a possessiveness of him. Their dedication of devotion is exclusive to him. Nothing else matters. So, out of humility, he hints that everyone should protect the child with possessiveness, since he has extraordinary qualities. But he states it in another way. In the last line, one should not be surprised by his activities. The child of Nanda is equal to Narayana in qualities. One should not be astonished by the activities of the son who is like Narayana. But you should not become indifferent to protecting him by becoming astonished. If you remember, astonishment results in one forgetting his potencies. So don't become so astonished that you don't protect him. The primary mood, Nanda, is your affection for him as your son. So don't stand back when he shows his divinity. You're his father and be protective of him. Let the primary sweetness predominate. Don't be overwhelmed by his majesty, by his power. But protect him with possessiveness, because he has these extraordinary qualities. Mentioning his activities, Nanda also indicates, you know, he's explaining all this to, this is chapter 26. Do not be astonished that he is the natural object of our prema and naturally feels prema. They are, however, not aware that the cause of that love is their relationship. They are, however, not aware that the cause of that love is that their relationship is natural and eternal. They were aware of Garga's words previously, for after killing Bhaka, they said, the words of persons in full knowledge of Brahman never become untrue. It is very wonderful that whatever Garga Muni predicted, we are now actually experiencing in all detail. So this reference is from chapter 26. So it's discussed in chapter 8, chapter 11, which is what we're discussing this evening, and chapter 26. There's a theme, and it's kind of growing by saying it in different ways at different times. However, now the words taken together in seven verses has special significance. The seven verses, that's chapter 26, where Nanda is explaining how Krishna was able to lift Govardhan Hill and do all the other wonderful things that Krishna did. Same as what they're doing now in chapter 11. We're astonished. And in our astonishment, it's curious. What's astonishing us is how he's being protected again and again. But they can't see it's Krishna protecting. They can't see his powers. It's God is protecting him, or the piety of this child is protecting him, or somehow he's been given some special powers and his greatness is protecting him because of his piety. These people that are impious, they're being destroyed by his piety. That's what happens to impious people. Their impiety implodes them. We heard that yesterday. But they just, you know, around and around and around, but because of the strength of their love, they can't see that he's the personality of Godhead. They can't see all of his powers. That's this astonishment factor. It's the secondary rasa. Going back to chapter 26, the wonderful, astonishment. That's the secondary rasa. Krishna is stimulating their love in various ways by his various shaktis. We're going to hear some more about those shaktis tomorrow morning, because that was a question that was asked in the morning class. So I spent a good deal of time today going through all this. The Yogamaya potency and Purnamasi and Subhadra, and how does it all fit together? There's the internal potencies of Krishna are unlimited. They're principal ones, and there's different lists of his principal ones, and we'll hear some more about it. But it's Krishna's potencies are moving the hearts and the minds and the lives of the residents of Vrindavan, and they're just being tossed around on an ocean of prema rasa, and they don't know where they are. But they're feeling different kinds of ecstasies, bhavas, because that's what we're understanding. What prema is just a mixing of different bhavas. And there they go, and there they go, and there they go. They have a primary rasa or sthayi bhava. And all these other things that happen, acharyas, I mean, I never read the Krishna book like this before, or the 10th canto like this before, but acharyas are taking it and fluffing it out and fluffing it out, and they're appreciating, and through them we can appreciate what's the nature of Vraja Prem. It's just this concert of primary rasas mixing with different bhavas and having different expressions of loving exchange with different transcendental feelings that are completely pure. And like this point of they have no material pangs. They have pangs, but it serves as an impetus for ecstatic love for Krishna, whatever it is. So their forms are completely spiritual. And one can become like them by spiritualized forms and still, perceive things and recognize things and deal with things in practical ways. But with Krishna at the center, that's the life of Krishna consciousness. That's the life of Krishna bhakti. And Krishna bhakti in its most exalted stage, the superlative stage, is this Braja Bhakti, or Braja Prem. Really very special. So we're getting a picture, once again, of how the elders, learned elders, take a look at this amazing set of things that Krishna does. And they're astonished. And rightly so. They don't conclude, even they've already been through it earlier. Maybe, they don't settle on, yeah, he's Narayan. Even he shows them this, the kingdom of God. He shows it to them. They want, he shows it to them. And they don't reach the conclusion he's God, because their affection is so strong. Curtain closes, Yogamaya closes, and they just carry on with their loving exchange with Krishna as their friend and parent and darling child and lover. We'll hear some more about that tomorrow, the Yogamaya potency and how that works. This is a continuation of our discussion in the morning. So we started this. We'll try and see how it works. My doubt about how this will work well is passing the microphone efficiently. So you want to be the runner to pass the microphone efficiently?
Sure.
And we'll try. So we'll start with anyone in the room would like to ask some questions, and we'll go to online and back and forth. Any questions or discussion topics?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, I would like to hear about the Hasya Bhakti which you read. Is that been experienced by the Gopas and Vandi?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But you heard the meaning. It means laughter. But, you know, they get into a mood where Krishna does something funny or says something funny, or they say something funny to Krishna. And that takes over. You know that nice painting where they ask Krishna to close his eyes and he put flour in his mouth instead of prasadam? Because the game is, close your eyes, we're going to put some prasadam in your mouth and tell us what it is just by chewing it without seeing it. That's a game that boys would play. Or, you know, imitating the sounds of the animals, or calling down in a dark well with some bad words, and, you know, they would just, the rasa is still the primary, the friendship rasa is there, but the laughter just overwhelms the primary rasa. Yes. Okay. So, online?
This is Kirti Prabhu's question. I heard when the five primary rasas come in contact with seven secondary rasas, the secondary rasa becomes dominant.
Yes.
While maintaining the primary rasa.
Yes.
Could you kindly give example of a personality who served Krishna in Shantarasa and Bibhatsa?
No. I'm not so skilled in all of this. I can read. I'm being educated as I'm going along and sharing that with all of you, but I don't know an example. You can look one up. If you can find one, then you can share that with us later. Kirti.
Guru Maharaj, did you say that bhakti in abominable way?
Say it again.
Bhakti in abominable way, did you say it like that?
I'm just reading. So it's not like I said.
I don't understand, what does that mean?
If I had an example, I'll tell you what. I'll see if I can find an example. So, the principle is, when one's attachment for Krishna develops in an abominable way, and Krishna enjoys it, that is called bibhatsa bhakti rasa. So that's the meaning. So as we go along, I'm waiting for the questions, I'll see if I can find what's an example. Okay? Okay. Go ahead.
So Kirti Prabhu is asking, does Bhishma come in the category of Shanta and Bibhatsa?
No. He is Dasya and Astonishment. Excuse me, Chivalry, Veera. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Maharaj, I heard that Shukadeva Goswami was in his mother's womb for 16 years.
Yeah,
and he refused to come out unless Krishna came in person to see him.
Not exactly. His father figured it out. He didn't say, you know, it wasn't like that. His father figured Krishna could convince him. So he went all the way to get Krishna. Krishna came.
I mean, if Vyasadeva is an expansion of Krishna, why can't he do it himself?
Why? Like, well, because that was the Lord's arrangement. That's why.
Megha Mataji has a question, yesterday's hostess. So her question is, the primary rasas are the main ones and secondary rasas are part of primary rasas.
Why do you say that?
She's asking, is this right?
Well, it's not part of, it's just enhancing.
So for example, Yashoda Maya was in Vatsala Rasa. Then the secondary rasas are temporary kind. Am I correct?
Yes.
The different secondary rasas come and go.
Yes.
And Vatsala Rasa remains.
Yes, that's correct.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So my question is that why can't Krishna just take us all back to whoever wants to go back to Godhead?
He's ready. He's inviting us.
Like, why can't he just take us?
Because he doesn't interfere with our free will. Okay. Here's one reference. This is maybe not conclusive. You're done, right?
Yeah.
Okay. This is from Jiva Goswami's Priti Sandarbha, text 99, or Anuchet Nanda 9. Those who saw Krishna as the universal form saw him as a material body, a human child. Thus they were fools. They are similar to the faithless brahmanas who refuse to give Krishna food. Some who are ignorant of the Lord do not hate him, nor do they like him. The devotees are disgusted with their material conception of the Lord. In this way, Bibhatsa Rasa is nourished by the Lord. Among ordinary people, some are in knowledge because they realize the Lord as the best among men because of having portions of sweetness and power. Such persons have Samanya Bhakti. He goes on. So, that's not conclusive, but it's a hint.
So how can attachment come to abominable?
It's not attachment comes about by, but the attachment has that aroma or fragrance or feature. And they enjoy in that way. I don't think I can explain it because I don't understand and I'm trying to do my best. I'll just read it again. Those who saw Krishna as the universal form saw him as a material body, a human child. Thus they were fools. That seems to be the...
So that is called abominable thinking.
I'm just reading. Don't press my buttons because I can't answer. I'm just learning like you are. They are similar to the faithless brahmanas who refuse to give Krishna food. Some who are ignorant of the Lord do not hate him, nor do they like him. The devotees are disgusted with their mature conception of the Lord. In this way, bibhatsa rasa is nourished by the Lord. I'm left with some of the same questions as you. I'm just reading. Next. I'll do some more research and see if I can find out.
This question is from Rupa Mataji, Vinod Prabhu. So the question is about free will.
About which?
Free will.
Free will, okay.
Yeah. So we were reading 14th chapter, Krishna's disappearance from the first canto. So in the text 9, Prabhupada says that without the Lord's benediction, no one is successful simply by personal labor. And therefore, the conclusion is that God's sanction is the immediate cause for all happenings, good and bad. So the Lord gives, the Lord also gives, so now she is writing, the Lord also gives human being free will. How would I understand the things that happen in my life is from my free will or from Lord's sanction? Because many times I let things happen thinking it's Krishna's will and is bound to happen. But it could be just that my free will acting upon, and probably I could have acted better instead of just allowing things to happen the way it is. So punchline is, action of a living entity's free will is also from Lord's free will?
It's part of, there's several sentences that are outstandingly misworded. It's not the Lord's sanction means he wills something. So is she a mother? So when your children do nice things and your children do naughty things, maybe sometimes they do naughty things, and it's not like if you sanction they want to do something and you say no, 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 and they say yes, 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 and you say no, 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 and all right, with resignation. It's not like you're willing that they do some naughty things or some, you know, less than wholesome things. Now, your sanction is not as pervasive as Krishna's sanction. The sanction of Krishna is not even a blade of grass moves without the sanction of Krishna. So he doesn't like, okay, that blade of grass over there, you know, the wind blows and the blade of grass moves. So he's behind everything, but he's not willing things. His sanction doesn't mean he's willing things. So you're in this world, and there's lots of other living entities, spirit souls in this world. And it's very complicated because different wills of different spirit souls are going in all kinds of different directions. All the time. But you're not inconsequential. You're a living entity that has free will. You're a living entity with free will. And you're willing something. Let's say, I want to be a millionaire. Maybe you're not willing to be a millionaire, but some people are willing to be a millionaire. And it's not going to happen without sanction. It's not that Krishna's thinking, great, I'm just looking for that person who wanted to be a millionaire. Voila, you're a millionaire. It's the term sanction. What you should understand from that is we're dependent. You may want to become a millionaire, and you may or may not become a millionaire. No matter how much you work and try and, you know, endeavor, you may not get the gold medal. You may not be the, whatever it is, the thing that you want, that you're willing. You may not happen. You may not be able to jump over the moon. although you may have a will to jump over the moon. But it won't happen without the sanction of the Lord. So we're dependent. Even to, you know, step over a pebble, it won't happen without the sanction of the Lord. So we're dependent beings. So his, when we're doing things, or we have free will to choose, there's not unlimited capacity to choose. Back to the, you know, do you passively accept things because it looks like it's Krishna's sanctioning it, so you just passively let it happen? You can, that's a choice, that's a free will choice. And there's so many other free will choices besides that one. So, make your free will choices wisely. But just because you're making a free will choice doesn't mean it's going to happen. It has to be sanctioned. You can't jump over the moon unless it's sanctioned. But then you can maybe jump over the moon if it's sanctioned. Don't be passive. Mindlessly saying, this is the will of Krishna. Things are happening by his sanction, and then you can respond. You have a relationship with him, and you have, you know, some responsibilities to carry out in this world, and you carry them out. And according to the intelligence that Krishna gives you. Anything else in the room? We'll go to online. Keep going.
So this question is from Sashimukhi Mataji from Houston. Are the primary rasas dharma? If so, is the
primary rasas what?
Dharma?
No. It's a different topic than dharma. Go ahead.
So the second part of the question was, if so, is the dharma of the soul bhakti?
It's not if so, but yes, the dharma of the soul is bhakti. Go ahead.
And this question is from Tulasi Mataji from Nepal, Rutul Prabhu's wife. Maharaj, you said that Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, Radharani, Dasharatha are all expansions of Krishna.
I didn't say that. Nice try.
So we are part and parcel of Krishna. So are we also expansions of Krishna?
Well, in one sense, Krishna is the source of everything and everyone. There isn't something that exists that's not Krishna's expansion. So as Rama is Krishna's expansion, and Rama has his potencies, and Rama expands his potencies in different manifestations and so forth. And, you know, in the highest sense, everything is Krishna's expansion. But then in a more particular sense, there expansions of Krishna that have their own sub-expansions. Whew. Really getting up there in these questions.
The next question is from Rajeshwari Pran Mataji from Srihari, her son. In the spiritual world, if we are 100% Krishna conscious, how come our mind and free will chose to come here?
It was a bad, bad mistake. We misused our free will. Someone gave you $1 million and you went and did something stupid with it. And that was a free will choice. Okay?
And the second question from Srihari is that, will there be any devotees at the end of Kali Yuga? What will happen to the devotees when Kalki comes?
Well, they'll be in hiding and Kalki will take care of the non-devotees and the devotees will remain. The description that I have heard is the perfected souls will descend from the higher realms, higher dimensional realms, and begin the next Satya Yuga. So it starts off right back at the top again.
This question is from Sanchari. I don't have any particular situation in mind when asking this question. Just a general ask. In the first canto, the chapter on Ashwatthama's punishment, Srila Prabhupada writes that Draupadi let her sentiments carry her when she, despite his fallen position, still paid respects to him, that she was not 100% correct in doing so. In their case, it was very clear cut. But in the situation of aspiring devotees, we are trained not to judge another person's devotional service. How do we use our intelligence to discriminate when interacting with devotees who don't meet the moral standards? Can you please explain what the actions taken are per the levels of the devotees? What actions are taken per the level of the devotees?
Well, it's a very broad question, and I'll give a broad answer. There's using Christian terminology, Prabhupada would speak like this. There's the sin and there's the sinner. There's the soul and there's the behavior of the soul. So someone is a devotee in the broadest of senses if they just chant Krishna's name once. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said like that. And so then there's grades of devotees. So we're enjoined as Madhyama devotees to distinguish between levels of devotion. We're not judging, but someone's on the Kanishtha, someone's on the Madhya, someone's on the Uttama position. And we're enjoined to know what the symptoms of each of them are. And so if someone's doing some immoral activity, that's not the behavior of a devotee. Immoral behavior, immoral conduct is not the behavior of a devotee. Supposing in the heart of that person, there's some devotion to Krishna that's, stirs over time. So that we want to fan that spark of devotion to Krishna. We don't. What I think she's asking is how should she or we regard persons who are in the devotee community, but they're doing non-devotional and even bad conduct types of things, or immoral or totally improper kinds of things. So how we should regard them is they've forgotten Krishna. They're covered by sensual weakness and misdirected behavior, bad association. And so we regard where they are in their spiritual position at the moment, see their spiritual identity, and, depending upon the nature of what they've done. Supposing it's, child abuse. That's a line that doesn't get crossed. It's, the police need to deal with that person. And we have our, we maintain standards of how we protect. Now, even while we're protecting, we're not condemning the person. We're just protecting innocent people and keeping that person from a situation where they can again perpetrate such wrong things. So, you know, what's appropriate depends upon the misconduct or the deviation. And how we regard the individual should go to the soul within, and the bhakti that's connected to the soul within, encourage that, and take appropriate actions according to the, you know, the degree of misconduct, the nature and the degree of the misconduct. That's a long answer for a, you know, very broad question.
This question is from Satish Bhatnagar Prabhu. Is there a correlation between the 12 rasas and the 12 notes in an octave?
They both have the number 12 in it. That's the correlation between them.
And this is from Kirti Prabhu. Is this right understanding that one cannot serve Krishna in secondary rasa without being in primary rasa?
Well, you won't even know what a secondary rasa is without the primary rasa. So yes, it's a correct understanding.
And this is from Rajeshwari Pran Mataji, I think from India. Is there any significant reason why Shukadev Goswami first spoke about the universal form in God realization in Bhagavatam, second canto, first chapter?
Yeah. You read the chapter and you'll find the answer to your question, but it's to help people that don't even have a personal conception of God to begin to form a personal conception of God. That's why he began that way. Is that it? Okay, so I'll see if I can find some answer, and tomorrow we'll touch on the topic, because I don't have practical examples. And you know, even the, I just read something that I just read, and it adds a little light, but it's not like, oh, that's what it is. Here's a verse from Canto 10, Chapter 60. A woman who fails to relish the fragrance of the honey of your lotus feet becomes totally befooled, and thus she accepts her husband or lover, a living corpse covered with skin. This is Rukmini, right? Whiskers, nails, hair, head hair, and body hair, and filled with flesh, bones, blood, parasites, feces, mucus, bile, and ear. And his comment, Jiva Goswami's comment, thus, one should not have faith that material vibhavas can generate rasa. In generating rasa, it produces bhivatsa, or disgust, in all cases. Now we heard there's material and spiritual rasa. So I'm still not clear what it is. The secondary rasa. So there's material disgust and there's the spiritual. Not clear. Okay. Prabhupada.